This is a Pinball News production.
Hey, everybody. It's my pleasure, let me say, to be here at the 30th year. I'm one of you, and you are one of me. And I think that's why I want to talk about pinball collectors. I'm not from the industry. I'm a consumer, and I've been a consumer for a long time. And I don't have a lot of time to talk. How are you doing? Good. But because I like to bring everybody back on time, every time Rob's asked me to speak, I say I'm going to do that. So I'm going to put my phone out. I'm going to do what I do when I teach. I'm just going to keep an eye on it. And then David Fix, you give me the one eye when I get really close. All right. So take a look at this picture. Pinball owners were once players. And it's impossible. Maybe it's not impossible to become an owner without becoming a player first. I could imagine we have some of those cases where I heard Gary Stern say for several years now that they need to go ask mommy for permission. I never asked my wife for permission for any of the games that I bought except for the first one, because she saw how happy I was about it. And at the time that I got into it, it was a wise decision. I made money on pinball. I think it's getting harder to do these days. But I bought a game and I restored the game. And then I continued to let this go and create revenue until I was buying brand new games and became a customer directly to the distributors that Stern sold their product to, which I think maybe some of you are as well. How many of you guys own a brand new machine? Has anybody in here bought a brand new machine? Wow. Are you industry people and it was given to you for working in? No? So you paid big money, right? Did anybody ever get a machine that raised your hand on closeout from Williams for about $1,800? Or were all these like Stern machines? These are Stern machines? So they're expensive. They cost a lot of money. It's a luxury product, right? It's kind of like, well, you could get a used car or you can get a brand new car. So there has to be something that drives us, that gets us really excited about pinball, something ridiculous to where we'll spend thousands of dollars on a brand new machine. It's happening, right? The marketplace is there. We're building, well, we're not, I'm not part of it, but Rick's building Medieval Madness. And there's other crazy cool machines here and there that we see every year growing and growing here at Expo. So it started, and with me it started in the 70s and the 80s. And I was a kid, and I was a little green to this whole arcade amusement thing. And there wasn't a lot of video games back then. They were black and white or they were electromechanical. But pinball was so exciting and alive. Not that it's any different today. It's even better. It's an amusement park under the glass. It was so cool. And it was very social because we gathered around together. And we played the game. And even though all we had to do is like light A, B, C, and D, you know, and that got boring, really. If you're playing by yourself, you had other people that you could bring into the game, even for free. Because if you had a few credits, it's more fun to play against somebody and show how good you are, right? And then they take you down, which happens regularly in my basement. But we voted with our quarters. We voted on what we liked with our quarters. We voted whether or not we thought the operator was good or not, maybe in terms of keeping his machine serviced by either the coin, filling the coin box or not. So there was the video game bomb, and in my life, I needed something new in pinball. The lighting A, B, C, and D wasn't enough. Now, there were some really good games, but the operators had taken those off the market, and they were buying some of the stuff that maybe Bally and Williams was producing at the time when they were cost-cutting, and they were really, really wasn't very innovative and exciting to me. So, thank goodness. I mean, history, many of us have heard or read that Space Shuttle was the game that saved pinball, and maybe it was. All I know is that as a consumer, once the video games faded away, and we had all these black cabinets that somebody had used like a roller and painted that Tron cabinet and stuck a sticker on it, and it was some game that you wouldn't remember. I won't remember the names of hardly any of them. SNK made this game, or Taito made this game. There was a pinball machine, and it was Space Shuttle. There's two of them. It was High Speed, and especially Pinbot. I went bonkers over this game. I remember walking to an arcade, and I always scanned the arcade looking for a pinball machine, and there's a pinball machine. And so, honestly, this is true. As a teenager, I walked over to the game, just kind of rolling my eyes, going, you know, what is this? And then I went, holy crap, what is this? There's something new going on here. It was exciting for me. So I voted with my quarters, and I started filling it in. And not only, here's the cool thing about this, and I think all you guys get this. I mean, how many of you guys are really going after a game with shallow rules to own in your home? To spend thousands of dollars for a game that gets old, you know, pretty much the day you get it. So then you got to find somebody to compete just to keep it fun. I hope none of you find that, because that might be the last new pinball you'll ever buy. You may be so disconnected with that. So important for industry to support these games with software updates, right? And feature sets that are deep and rich for us to want to continue to spend our hard-earned money on buying new machines. So these games had that built in. Right, wrong, or indifferent from the industry perspective, it was super important because I put more money in those games with deep rule sets back then. I didn't really understand why I was doing it until next. And that's whenever we had the Addams Family. I was in college at this time, and the Addams Family was out, and I was chasing girls, and I was trying to study, but chasing more girls than studying. And then we ended up at this pool hall, and I remember the first time I saw Addams Family. And so I walked up to it just like before. I'd scan the pool hall. Here's a game. And I said, let's see what they're doing now. And so I had to put two quarters in it to make it work. And then, you know how it goes. Here comes Thing, his hand, and it grabs the ball and it drops it, and it pops out somewhere else. Actually, I went, where did my ball go? You know, right? Very first time? I mean, I'd been disconnected from pinball for a little while, and this game is current and in the marketplace. And I see this game, and it swallows the ball, and then it poops it out somewhere else. And I went, wow. And I didn't know how to take that for a minute. And then I thought, wow, that's really cool, because pinball's finally elevated itself. You know, I mean, it really has taken on a new phase, I think, of pinball. And I didn't know that I really understood that then, but I surely understood it later. It was an important phase. And mode-based gameplay was exciting. And see, the reason why I bring all this stuff up about pinball evolution, and I know maybe for some people, some of us enthusiasts and collectors, maybe we kind of say, wow, pinball really hasn't changed so much since 1992 or 90. But, you know, because it kind of looks the same, we have the domination, but it really has, right? I mean, we have some new innovative things that are being injected, whether it's by the industry or whether it's by hobbyists / enthusiasts / collectors who make it happen, which is exciting. It's exciting. So pinball felt new again to me then, and I had this very compelling desire to play it. And even more, because operators didn't keep it around, I wanted to own it. Bad. Why? Why? They're big. They take up space. So more, and I'm not kidding, more than I wanted to drop quarters in the machine when I was a kid, whenever I was at a point in my life when I could do it, I had to have one. I was married and employed and bored and financially able to get started. And the game that kept and fired me up, just it never let me let go of pinball. I mean, I had a yard to mow, and I had a house to maintain, and sometimes I had to cook dinner, and we had to get started with a family. And all these things were on my mind, the pressures of my new job, you know, right after I got out of college. But there was a truck stop. I was traveling around, and there was these truck stops I'd stop in and would play some pinball, if they had any. And Medieval Madness blew me away. It blew me away. It didn't have a thing hand coming out and grabbing a ball and plooping it out somewhere else. But, you know, you had animated things that were going on. The theme sold me. But you know what really had me throughout all the years when I was thinking about this? 6-hour drive to get here. I'm thinking about this talk. And I'm like, what is the one thing that I think industry, at least back some years ago, or maybe even now some, they don't want to spend money developing, but I think is so important? Now, if you knew my podcast partner, Steve Rothschild, he felt the same way. It's audio. And David was up here just a minute ago talking audio. Exciting stuff for me. But nobody can ever hear it, right? Because it's so loud. Well, it's loud in here because you got so many machines. But as I was playing some of the new Stern machines that we don't have down south, I really need to catch up. And it was good to catch up last night. One of the things that me and Darren, who's back there, we kept saying to each other was, man, it would be really cool if we could hear this. You know? Because we love the sound of modern pinball. Anyway. What about pinball ownership? Man, I first got into pinball ownership in 97. I had to dig around a little bit. The internet was still, you could say it was in its infancy. We had about 5 years of pinball, or internet growth behind us, and it was still, I mean, compared to where we're at today, it was really lame. But we had a news group, which are pretty much extinct, right? But yet RGP still strong. So back in the day, RGP was there, and it was much smaller than it is today. Way much smaller. And there was no pin side, and there really wasn't a whole lot out there that people had published, but there were enough people that were as enthusiastic and selfless people that spent hours typing messages trying to help other people. And of course, that has done nothing but grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger. Was it the industry that was trying to get me into collecting old pinball machines? No, it was not. It was the collectors that was helping me go. And boy, did I ever. Man, I went nuts. My wife really thought I was crazy. The first truckload of machines, the first six machines I piled into one truck, she really thought, I mean, I think I'm going to have to divorce this guy. I mean, she told me that. And I said, don't worry, we'll sell some of these. And you know, 12 years later, we did. So it's natural for collectors to share their pinball machines, too. That's something that we've done. We've promoted pinball. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's a few people that hoard and they don't want to share. Or maybe they just stock them up and brag about how many they own, but they'll never run. And you just worry about them because they're just sitting there, right, one on top of the other. But by and large, pinball collectors want to share what they have and what they have done, and they want to encourage people to get involved, and it's more fun to compete, right? So we want to play together. And so the social experience has never been any stronger, ever, ever. Look at this show. Look how big this show is. If you've been around this show for a while, my first show was in 2001. This is Expo 2001 on steroids, man. All these presentations, all these people talking, it's crazy. And it's exciting. So it was so exciting that I decided to start a little group called SIPA, Southern Illinois Pinball Players Association. And I started to grab people to get involved with me. My father-in-law, who opened up my garage door one day and saw seven pinball machines, and he and I didn't talk so much at the time. I mean, I just married his daughter. But he saw these machines, and suddenly he was my friend again. And, I mean, really, he was coming over to play pinball. And I don't know if you know him. It's Dennis Blankenship, and he's owned, since that day, at least over 100 EM pinball machines, and he bought one brand-new Stern pinball machine in the box. He bought an Elvis. So he's a consumer of brand-new pinball product, too, right? Would he have been if I did not have him come over? Would he have been if I had never gotten into the hobby? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. Kenny Hall, another local guy in Southern Illinois that some of you guys may know, had a machine, but he had kind of gotten away from it. He didn't have a social experience with anybody. He was kind of on his own. And suddenly he began to get the fever again. And Steve Rothschild, he was a guy I worked with at UPS back when I was with that company. And Steve jumped on board. He came to a pinball party that I had. I was inviting newbies, so we weren't going to have a tournament and scare them off. So what we were going to do is just have some fun, eat, and everybody just play games and just chit-chat and so on. And man, it grabbed a hold of this guy. And if you've listened to the Silverball podcast before, you know it. He was all in 100%. So we have a regional pinball show that ran in Southern Illinois for 5 years. We left Expo when Steve Rothschild went with me to his first Expo, and I don't remember when it was, maybe 2003. It must have been because we started the Southern show in 2004. He couldn't wait to get back to Marion, Illinois, 6 hours south, and say, man, how can we make a show here? And we did it for 5 years, and we were always 2 inches shorter at the end of the show from lifting all these games and carrying them. And we just really wore ourselves out. But we hit, on average, 350 attendees, and over half of those attendees were regional, and they had no previous experience with pinball ownership. So, thanks, David. We'll celebrate the heroes in each category, just a few categories. By the way, all of you are in a category if you're a collector. Look at this. We're talking about heroes of restoration like the folks that created reproduction circuit boards. You can see some of those up there. Clay Harrell deserves a ton of recognition for being really one of those first people to pop out repair information on the internet in broad spectrum, right? Videos and his repair manuals. And he helped me tremendously, and he inspired me to come up with a podcast too from a different perspective, repair videos from a different perspective. And you know what? I've inspired other people to do the same thing. So I've been told, and I can't believe it. And I'm so happy that it worked out like that. We have, and there we go, we see how it's grown from that. Heroes of Influence, Tim Arnold's parties, and later the museum. Didn't that inspire some people to do the same thing all around the world? Pinball Expo. I'd go over and give you a hug, but I'm almost out of time. Rob Burke, come on, man, 30 years. How many pinball shows do we have around the world right now? It's ridiculous. All around the world? I mean, even my little show that we did for 5 years, you know, it was inspired by this very event. Coaches in pinball competition, Steve and Roger. I remember coming to an event, a talk, and leaving so inspired by that to actually have serious competitions. Now, I'm no player, right? I'm not any of the Sharp brothers. They embarrass me. They make me look so bad. But I respect what they're doing, man. And how many people? IFPA has 28,000, I think it was, names. Wow. And it's just growing ridiculously. Jack Guarneri, Pinball Sales, the greatest salesperson in the world probably for brand new pinball in the home. And there he is. Jack, you owe me $20 for that. Heroes of influence. Yeah, there it is. 26,828 players at least listed in IFPA and growing. I'm amazed. Pinball-centric arcades and barcades. Talked to somebody in the hallway just last night who said, yes, I'm trying to turn this concept and this idea into a barcade like the Silver Ballroom in St. Louis. It just keeps growing and growing. Heroes of innovation. People who are doing mod kits. These are some of the earlier people. But people who are emulating games. Do you guys remember my little mini pin? I don't know if you remember this. Some of you guys remember this, right? It was just a little pinball emulator. And I brought it in, and I talked about it, I think, in 09 or 2011, or one of those. 09, I think. I walked out in the hall, and there's a guy that's building them. I'm so glad, because people were emailing me going, hey, man, can you send me the dimensions for your game? And I'm like, oh, it's kind of monitor dependent. But anyway, it's exciting. Did I inspire somebody? I don't know. He didn't even know who I was, so I don't know. But maybe seven generations around, he was inspired by something I did. I hope, because I've been inspired by so many other things, so many other people before me. Look at the inspiration that's keeping pinball alive in software alone. 27 million downloads on Android, just on the Android marketplace, of the Pinball Arcade and Zen Pinball, and about four other little games. So people are playing pinball even when they can't physically play pinball. Pinball is growing, it's blossoming, and it's amazing. And things like Pinball Arcade that are real licensed pinball titles. So people can go see those someplace and go, wow, I've heard this one time. I can't believe that's a real pinball machine. I only thought it was on my tablet. Wow, isn't that crazy? Millions of people. Would pinball be dead if it wasn't for the collector? I don't know the answer to that. But I do know a lot of people think so. We have poured millions, is it safe to say that? I mean, we just had Rick up here talking about a marketplace. He is developing product that we're excited about for a marketplace of new pinball ownership? No, I mean, it's for all these people that are preserving these games. Well, and it is new pinball ownership with Medieval Madness. So he's creating a brand new machine for us. Why? Because we love that game enough that we want to throw our dollars toward that game. So it's a fascinating thing. I mean, are we the future? I think we are. I think we are for sure. I don't know if it would be dead without us, but I certainly believe that we've made a massive impact. And finally, if you would, because I want all of you, if you would do me this favor, I want to give you a round of applause, but I can't do it myself. You collectors and enthusiasts, for your influence, and also for this man that you see right here. Hold on. That went too fast. Yes. Steve.